almost under assault by the Castro boys. No longer is, but this is literally the first place in my career I ever, overseas I ever deployed to. But in any event, good morning, Casey, Amy. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for what you've done here. You've been a tremendous leader, to say the least, done a magnificent job. And again, you were the only nominee, but I wouldn't have taken you if you weren't as good as you are. I mean, I could have always said, no, I want another one. So, and I know we joke about it a lot, but you're a little bit more than an old mule. I also want to recognize you, Amy, for everything you've done here and our tremendous work and the support and just the tone that you set here among the families, among the members of the JTF, just superb, and can't thank you enough. You know, we tend to recognize the guys and gals in uniform all the time and just simply don't give enough credit to the spouses and families, so thanks so very much. Let me say just a few words about Casey's leadership. I don't have to tell anyone in this church right now. Absolute perfect man for the job when we selected him. He deserves all of the credit for all of the great things leadership things that have happened here in the JTF over the last year. And of course, he very much, I think, subscribes to the same view that I do about command, and that is, you can't do it all by yourself. I oftentimes tell the story when I was in Iraq, and a reporter asked me, you know, you've got 40,000 Americans that work for you, soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines. You've got another 40,000 Iraqi police and army. You've got an AO, the Sunni sheikhs. You get the AO that's the size of New England almost. How do you run this place? How do you command this place every day? And I said, well, it takes about 11 million, probably here at Gitmo, closer to 1 million decisions a day. But I said, I make about 8 of them. And the reporter said, 8 million? I said, nope, I make 8. And she said, well, who makes all the other decisions? I said, well, the sergeants and the corporals and the lieutenants, and frankly, the E1s that are out there on patrol, they make their own decisions, life and death always. You've got to run an organization like that. You can't do it all yourself. And again, this skill that you have, Casey, in powering down the command and letting people take responsibility and be involved in what goes on here day to day is absolutely the right way to run any organization. If you're going to be really successful as a manager, as a leader, the only way, I mean, there's a lot of good managers and leaders out there, but and commanders, but the really, really good ones just understand powering down and just unleashing people's initiative and that kind of thing, and you personify that. We all owe you a great deal of debt. You know, I know the President of the United States doesn't every day think about how things are going in Guantanamo, but if he did, he would Roger all to what I've said about your leadership and what you've done down here. You've been absolutely masterful, not only in commanding, but just as importantly in Jose. This is something that you really have to take to heart. The number of guests that you've encountered down here, congressional staff, congressional members of Congress, media, all of whom have gone away with a different opinion of what goes on down here in Guantanamo Bay. They may still be against the policy, but in terms of how this place is run and the care and the well-being and the dignity that the detainees receive, they come up with a very, very, very different view than what they read in the agenda-driven press. But most importantly, as any great commander, Casey, you won the trust and confidence of your troops. That's not always easy to do, we know that. Jose, thank you for stepping in when we need you most. I know you're fully prepared to handle the responsibilities, the pressures. If I were you, I'd listen to my sergeant major, I'd listen to my staff, I'd listen to my NCOs, and you'll be in good shape, just like any great commander. You're the perfect guy, I think, right now to take this command. Interesting note, he's Cuban-American, his parents are from Cuba. So in a way, Jose's coming home. And I just hope the Castro brothers really appreciate the fact that someone of your status has risen to the top of the Air Force. Fighter pilot, first and foremost, I think, but a great leader, great staff guy, and I know you'll be a great, great commander. And you're taking command at exactly, as I say, the right time. You're part of the Southcom family already. You know, KC never, ever, ever blamed you for the staff work, so you should never blame Rick and the rest of the crowd at Southcom for screwing things up. But you're familiar with the mission, and you're going to do a super job. Now I'd like to just comment on the rest of the crowd in the organization. And as I always do, I want to appeal to who we are as military professionals, as American military professionals. You know, all of our services have kind of catchwords, what's important, you know, courage, honor, duty, commitment. But it really comes down about seven. All of our services, it comes down about seven. We talk about loyalty, we talk about duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage. These are our core values as military people. And as I say, all of those words apply to all of our services in one way or another. What most people, certainly in our country, don't understand is that what those kind of words define what JTF Gitmo is all about. And the self-appointed and the self-anointed critics of what goes on here don't even understand those words, let alone understand what they mean in our hearts. The mission here at Guantanamo is one of enormous complexity and sensitivity. The humane care of the detainees that are here, who are occasionally compliant, but most often defiant and violent. While you work to implement this mission that our Commander-in-Chief has given us, has given you to accomplish, you have done that superbly in spite of the behavior of what you put up with every day from the detainees. While doing your jobs, you also provide an essential support base to our intelligence professionals, certainly the commissions, medical, security, public affairs, operations, all within a pressure cooker, really, of international scrutiny and oversight. I don't have to tell you, Casey, you, Hoser, that the whole world watches what we do here, and one false move, one little hiccup, which frankly, in the 2.5 years I've been here, we haven't had a one, in spite of what we read in the agenda-driven press, but one false move and the critics are here to condemn everything that we do. To be clear, the one thing we in uniform are responsible for is the care and humane treatment of the detainees. We are not in control of the policy of Guantanamo Bay, simply the care of the detainees. We don't make the policy, we don't get a vote on the policy. We follow the exact orders of the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense. They sent you here, gave me the responsibility, this mission, to serve in one of the most intense and most scrutinized environments that any of us will ever experience. I've been around a long time, and this is the most zero defects mission that I personally have ever been involved in. You work long shifts, you deal with enormous stress, amounts of stress, and it always breaks my heart when I read the negative reporting of what theoretically or what supposedly goes on here. It breaks my heart because I know the reporting is wrong, and I believe the media representatives that report what goes on here know it's wrong, but they go on their merry way, highlighting the negative aspects of what might go on in Gitmo and never giving you credit for what you do here. What's even more frustrating, frankly, is that some of us are not even allowed to do the jobs we were sent here to do. With all of the other things that the guard force, the detention force has to put up with, discrimination against who we are as Americans should not be one of them. Yet since November, and you know this better than I do, Casey, we have labored under an order that discriminates specifically against some of our personnel because of who they are, and that's un-American. And I, as a personal failure, have not been able to convince people that could change that ruling to change it. That's my failure, certainly not yours. But these are the topics that really, very rarely get discussed. These are the various things that the journalists never comment on, and that is the unbelievable professionalism and the effectiveness of what you and your staff have done here and your personnel have done down here during the year that you've been in command. And let's not forget who these men are that are detained here at Guantanamo. They are among the most hateful and violent men on the planet. Their worldview about human rights, about the rule of law, about the status of women in society, about other religions, their worldview of that is certainly a 7th century view that has long since faded into the past, or should have. Yet you men and women of the JTF execute your assigned missions to care for these detainees in a way that exceeds the conditions that are mandated by the Geneva Convention. And for your trouble, many of you endure endless hours of insults, splashing, and physical assault. And this includes our shipmates in the medical group who are routinely assaulted and spat upon, even while you provide these detainees life-giving, life care in medical care. Most of the men you deal with every day were taken from the battlefield, and they spend all of their days trying to get into your heads by taunting and name-calling, performing vulgar sexual acts in front of you, doing anything and everything to elicit a reaction from you. Even the smallest retaliatory reaction from you would be immediately misreported, misrepresented, lied about in the media and in the courts, and make front page news, but it never happens. That's the level of professionalism we see here. And the agenda-driven and self-appointed guardians of these men are forever frustrated because what they want, you have never given them, and that is something to write about, something to condemn you for. You stay cool and calm, you display patience and restraint, you don't know anger or resort to violence, even when you are soiled with a concoction of bodily fluids that turns the stomach, even in the telling, let alone when it's on your face, in your hair, or all over your uniform. Every one of you, every one of us in uniform, are ordinary people, but we perform remarkable and selfless acts of duty to a cause bigger than ourselves. You are among the best that this country produces. You're the best 1% of our society, I'm convinced of that. You're all good and decent men and women. You're all from mostly our neighborhoods, our small towns, farms. You are the salt of the earth of our society. You are ordinary Americans who do an extraordinary job every day. Here at Gitmo or anywhere else you've served or ever will serve. Soon enough, you will return home to your families and try to forget some of the things that you put up with here. But know that you did an honorable job, know that you did an important job, know that you did a job that I believe no one else on this planet could do in the way that you've done it. If Guantanamo is a symbol that some self-guided or self-serving and misguided pundits claim it is, and I don't believe it is a symbol of what they say it is, then the proof that it's not, the proof that they are wrong, is in the way that you conduct yourselves here every day. They will never stop hurling their dishonest accusations at us. They'll never tell the truth because it's not in their interest to tell the truth. But those of you who serve here, those of us that know what goes on here, know the truth and how well you execute the mission. Loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage. These are the truths you follow here at Guantanamo. It is who you are. And I will end with this. I have commanded troops all over the world. I've commanded troops in every clime and place in my career. I have never, ever been prouder of any that I have commanded than I am of you. For your decency, for your approach to your duties, for your professionalism, for your patience with the naysayers who relentlessly misrepresent what you do here, for your long-suffering dedication to a tough but critically important mission. I know KC and Jose share this pride, and I also know our president does, and I know our Secretary of Defense does. So to the outstanding men and women of this joint task force, I thank you. I also thank you on behalf of the President and Secretary Carter, our Secretary of Defense, and for reminding us all what love of country and selfless devotion to duty really looks like. What you do here every day is reflective of why our country is the greatest country on the planet. That there is an exceptionalism, and you know it if no one else does, there's an exceptionalism about our America that will remain forever safe only so long as we never run out of men and women like you. Dedicated men and women of character who step forward when they don't have to. Dedicated men and women of character that step forward when no one else in our society even considers it. Men and women of character who are willing to step forward and to hunt down and kill or bring to justice men who work to kill our people and destroy our way of life. For that, I salute you all. KC, Amy, I wish you well as you go over the side. And Jose, I welcome you aboard. And you'll get used to all of this nautical talk, I promise you. Thanks very much. Semper Fidelis.
Overseas. so nice to travel around Europe or Asia. So as any beautiful husband would do, 2 weeks later, I made her dreams come true, and here we find ourselves in Cuba. So be careful what you ask for, especially over the glass of your favorite wine. But in all seriousness, Phoebe has been an incredible anchor for this tour, as General Kelly mentioned, and for each of the previous 30 years of my service. She never questions the Navy's desire to help prove us at a moment's notice and to send us along on our next adventure. She's a model service ambassador and an impeccable hostess and a fearless advocate for the men and women of this mission and what they do day in and day out. She's convinced each and every member of the JTF that this is their extended family while they're away from home. Whether it's opening her home, not our home, her home, to over 1,800 guests this past year, or delivering breakfast burritos to soldiers standing duty in the salad courts or at isolated access points throughout the JTF AO. To quote Mike Myers' famous character, Dr. Evil, she completes me. Thanks for being the JTF contractor this past year. Point three. Those keeping score, 3-3, it's almost done. It didn't take long for me to realize that our mission is easily the most misunderstood, misrepresented, and as a result, underappreciated of any mission within the Department of Defense. Each and every day of this tour for the past year, I witnessed firsthand the professional conduct of those assigned here, under appalling conditions, often at the hands of those who have passed the guard. What I've come to know are the same things that I'll never forget about the incredible honor of serving here this past year. I will never forget about the heroic professionalism of soldiers and Navy corpsmen in the camps who refuse to retaliate and without exception stand on the moral high ground in their day-to-day duties despite verbal and physical assaults that surpass what most Americans would even imagine. I will never forget about the countless memories that reinforce my belief. Regardless of your rank or position, everyone in this task force is a leader. Another aspect of our ethos that was demonstrated by one of our youngest privates. Just 1 week after completing his RIP and assuming guard duties in Camp 5, where we house our most non-compliant detainees, this young man demonstrated fearless leadership by stepping in to stop an assault on a senior NCO. He could have easily hesitated, shrugged it off, and justified his inaction by the fact that this senior NCO would be able to take care of himself. But he didn't. Instead, he did the right thing, and despite being one of the most junior people here with only 2 weeks of time on ground, he stopped a dangerous assault against his battle buddy. But he's not alone, because there are countless other stories like this that demonstrate the same level of heroism and heroic performance on a day in, day out basis. And those stories are never told in the press. I will never forget about an uncommon commitment do the right thing, to stand up for one another, or for a principle in which we all believe. As General Kelly said, the JTF has complied with the court order, which prohibits the use of certain qualified members of my guard force for over 10 months now, in deference to religious rights of the detainees currently on trial. While this order was and continues to be disruptive to operations, it also lies in conflict with the U.S. Army and Department of Defense Equal Opportunity Guidance. Although we have yet to resolve this issue after an unexplainably long decision delay, the guards directly impacted have maintained the moral high ground. They bonded more closely together, and in doing so, they demonstrated maturity and professionalism that most Americans would not, under similar circumstances, understand. Now, for the last 6+ months, I regularly get asked a common question. What will you tell about it? What will you tell people about your time as commander in one? First, I had to think about that, but not for long. And although I've told this story many times in many settings over the last several months, I can see Sergeant Major smiling. He knows what's coming. It's worth coming one more time. Because late last year, there was a movie release, a movie called The Fury. And The Fury tells the story of a World War II tank crew during a time in which the Allies made a final push into Germany. In the last scene of that movie, the crew of Fury stands alone as the only surviving U.S. tank remaining within their formation. Under orders to hold a vital crossroad position to protect critical supply lines. During that time, their tank is disabled after a landmine hits one of their tracks. As the group's position is approached by a reinforced company of 300 SS Panzer Grenadiers, they quickly come to realize that if they stand their ground, the odds of survival are overwhelmingly against them. Given the dire nature of that position, the tank commander encouraged the other junior members of his crew to get away, escape, save their lives to a nearby forest. But as he climbs back into the tank, ready to stand against the enemies, the others follow. Immediately prior to their final engagement with the SS, the tank commander, knowing that they won't win, breathes a heavy sigh. With sweat on his face and mud dripping down, not having eaten in days, he whispers under his breath, "Best job I've ever done." Almost in unison, the other members of that feral crew demonstrate their trust and commitment to each other and personal buy-in to the mission to which they've been assigned. And while being drawn to serve something larger than themselves, they silently all repeat the same, "Best job I've ever had." For that very same reason, that's been my response to anyone who asks, "What will you take away about your time as commander?" And just like that tank crew, I know that regardless of the outcome, or regardless of perceptions outside the wire, here in Gitmo, this has been the best job I've ever had. I woke up at 3:30 this morning and took one final opportunity to visit the real heroes of this mission, the folks who work in the camps, the very same heroes who maintain the moral high ground, come to work every day, what's asked them regardless of the potential and the likelihood for verbal abuse, physical assault from detainees, misrepresentation about what they do in the press, and they comply with court orders that take the rights of detainees over the servicemen and women who provide for their care. But at 3:30 this morning, just as I observed for the first time a year ago, they continue to perform the most remarkable sense of professionalism that I or anyone else could ever imagine. So what's not to love? Stand in awe over their level of maturity, their conduct, and their dedication to this mission. And I appreciate the service of every man, serviceman, woman, civilian serving in this joint task force. For that, I offer one final thank you to the men and women who have served alongside for the past year. Thanks for your incredible professionalism and showing the rest of the world what I've seen firsthand every day. And I will never forget. The men and women of JTF Gitmo represent the very best of who we are and what we stand for.
Garcia, there's a story here on your thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. This for me is really a family event in many ways. Even though I don't know many of you guys have the audience, I feel like I'm wedding basically on the room size to a lot of people. And those who I'm about to know and go forward with that coalition, which I'm looking very forward to. It's been interesting for me. This is, I feel right now that I'm getting my dad's Corvette. He's passing me the keys. My brother just handed it off. His beautiful wife is running off. And I think he trusts me, but boy, I better not scratch it. So I'm a little worried about it. I'm very confident on what I'm about to take me out here, just because of years I did this job as outbound. Really, I was a staff guy, just kind of helping out the mission, but I did feel like I was part of Team Gitmo. I didn't know I was in training for this job, but boy, it really did prepare me. And one of the things that I got to say is that over the last few years, I had the opportunity to really work close with John Kelly and see how much he cares about the mission down here, about the men and women, about the things that we do here. And it is a great honor to me, and I'm really humbled by the fact that you've chosen me, selected me, to be part of this team. Because it is one of those honors, and I do say this honestly, that we are part of history. And I think that when it's all said and done, we're going to be on the right side of history. We're having done the right thing, the professional thing to do, day in and day out. No matter what they say and what they read, and what you read in the papers, it's what we do here day in and day out that counts. And then we all know it as we sit here in the front. Those who have been here before will always go out and say the same thing. The best job you ever had, and I think it's about to be the best job I ever had. I honestly feel that. I've been here for 2 years, and I've met many of you. And not necessarily, I know there's a lot of predecessors that are not here that I've met. But really, it doesn't change what goes on. In and out, every day. Those who come in from somewhere else show up with the same attitude to do the right thing. Funny how I got this job. About a month ago, I came down to South Palm. I mean, from South Palm to Gitmo. to do a compliance inspection. That was my last trip. I was on my way out of Scotland. I was a two-year assignment, so I was on my way to do something else. And I brought my team, Rick, and others to show up here and just basically kind of say goodbye to Amy and Kyle, because after a year of working with them, you really become friends after the daily conversations of, okay, what's going on down there? And that relationship and that bond really went beyond anything you could possibly imagine, because really, those who are here can see it every day. You can't make some of this stuff up that happens here. We just say that, you know, every day. And sometimes you laugh, and sometimes you get really upset. So as I came here and I sat at his back porch drinking a nice cold drink, and Amy taking care of us as always, we laughed, and he basically just said, yeah, you should have this job. You should really have this job. And he really went on to tell me how he felt about each and every one of you guys out there. But when he says the best job you ever had, I really did believe him. And back then, I didn't know I was going to be taking this job. I thought to myself, you know what, I missed an opportunity, because it would have been the best job I ever had. So here I sit a week after that, and we had a great time. And I get a phone call from General Kelly about 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, and he says, hey, some things have happened, and how would you like to go to Guantanamo Bay? Of course, I start smiling. I'm on the other end, and I'm like, you know, this is my chance. I'll kind of let him know that. Of course, I go, sir, that's a really tough job. I'm going to take one for the team. But the reality is I was extremely excited about it. Because the chance to be part of history, the chance to lead the men and women of the JTF, is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I could never pass up. And I'm proud to be here, humbled by you choosing me to do this, and I will do my best to lead these men and women. Thank you.